Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the bullet-ridden, rusted-out 1984 Pontiac Bonneville. That is Jolly Roger's studio.
Right.
This is the Q Filmcast once again, and welcome aboard. If you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week at Jolly Roger's studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought of it. That in our weekly top three list, which is always inspired by the movie in question. If you'd like to keep up with this, it's easy to do. Let's get this out of the way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Twitter, Facebook, iTunes.
All that stuff.
Hey, look, you know, it's easy to find.
Yeah.
The Q Filmcast. You Google it. You can Bing it.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do.
Bing.
If you want to go retro, just like your Pontiac Bonneville, you can dogpile us, too. I'm sure it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But what you really want to do is go to theqfilmcast.net. Yeah, so there you go, guys. Keep up with us. From there, you can follow us any way you want. So you can tell us what you think of the film we're about to review.
Sure.
Or you can review our review
of
the film we're about to review.
Yeah.
So let's get on with it, guys. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Once again, I'm Michael. Along with, just like last week and just like next week to come, I'm talking about James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
All right.
I'm doing okay. I'm off to a good start.
All right.
Yeah, looking for a proper finish. What about Max Gumbo Johnson?
What about him?
What about me?
I don't know.
I have an announcement to make.
That's a whole other podcast. Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah, what is it?
We're coming up on our 100th episode.
Ooh. Yeah, we are.
Three episodes from now or next one. I can't remember.
Anyway, I think this is 97.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're putting this out there. We want somebody to write us a theme song for our 100th episode. If we can get it for the 100th episode, we want a theme song. You can write it. You can put words in it, whatever. Rap it. I would love a rap song.
I want a rap song.
That would be totally awesome.
A rap song. I like slow jams.
I don't.
I want a rap song.
I want
some down tempo.
Whatever. Write what you want and email it to us, and we'll take all the submissions and we'll pick one. And whoever we pick will get a nice thank you.
Yeah, go to theqfilmcast.net. That's the best way to do that. Max, thank you for jumping in there.
Yeah.
Boy, he's really excited about this proposition. Yeah. I was going to bring it up.
Yeah.
Max says, stop what you're doing. Here's the thing. We need a theme song. That's what you're telling him.
I would like that. I think that would be fun.
I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Any kind of time frame we're looking for, like a minute? You want a minute theme song?
No, just write what you want.
Tell you, write whatever you want.
Sure.
That's right.
All right. Contest.
Yeah, because 100th episode.
Yeah.
It's like an anniversary.
And I'll tell you what, if you do write the winning theme song, we're going to let you on our 101st or whatever. The first time we actually play your theme song,
right?
It's going to be a devotion to it. We'll possibly even let you pick the show.
Sure.
No, we'll let them pick a movie.
All right.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You get to queue up a film.
And
can we review their song?
Well, we could put it up as a vote, maybe, somewhere on the QFilmcast.net.
Well, just to send us your stuff. We'll take it from there.
We're looking for it.
I like this. Max throws it out there. There you go. 100th episode coming up. This is episode 97, though. And let's talk about the film we're going to review.
I think we missed one guy.
Oh, wait. Wait a second. Sorry. I got caught up in the contest.
Yeah.
How about our producer? He's been here from the very, very beginning. And we're talking about the greatest producer in the history of this QFilmcast. That's Adam the Bomb Rogers.
And if you want to write my own personal theme song, you're welcome to do so as well.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah,
that would be funny. How about his terrible taste in movies?
Actually, someone please do that.
All right.
All right, guys, let's get going with it. All right, Savage, didn't you ask me how my week was?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you want to know how it went?
I do. How was your week, sir?
Well, thanks for asking, Sam. I had a pretty good week.
Yeah?
One ever asked me about my week.
No one cares.
No one cares.
Actually, maybe we should start asking asking Adam how his week. It'd be the same answer every week.
It'd be the same, right.
But let me tell you how my week was. Did you know at no time this week, Savage, did someone steal my perfectly legal and registered sidearm, responsibly protected with a trigger lock and smash it? Did you know that?
That's good news.
I didn't know you had a registered sidearm.
Yeah. Well, I didn't either. Smashed it, though. Okay. Didn't happen.
To pieces.
Did you know that at no time, Max, did you know at no time this week did anybody sneak into my house and take a bath?
That's great news,
Are you
man.
Sure?
Yeah, that's a good point. You don't know that.
Wait a second.
You're right.
There was some hair in the tub.
Exactly.
Long, straggly, homeless-looking hair, too. I didn't know what it was. Did you know at no time whatsoever did I have to make dinner from leftover carnival food?
Oh, you never make dinner to begin with.
I don't have to. Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Right.
All right, guys, let's reveal the movie in question if you haven't figured it out. I think some people may have just figured this out.
Yeah, maybe not.
Well,
plus,
it.
If you listened to last week's show, you already know anyways. We're talking about Blue Ruin.
Yeah.
2013, Max. This is queued up by you, Max Gumbo Johnson. Have you seen this film many, many times?
No.
Did you see it in the theater?
I didn't get to, no.
Okay.
I wanted to. I only played like 2 days, and I didn't get to go.
At the Bell Court.
Yeah.
At the Bell Court, yeah.
Yeah, because you and I talked about going to see it at one point, and it came and went, and I was glad to see it pop up on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So Max says, this week we're talking about Blue Ruin, man.
Yeah.
2013, starring Macon Blair. You know, this also stars Devin Rattray.
Rattray?
Devin
Rattray. Raggy.
Ruru.
We all did it.
I thought the same exact thing. Didn't know this, man. But you know the guy in this film, Devin Rattray, plays the friend of Macon Blair.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at his face, thought, I know this face. Looked into this. This is the kid from Home Alone.
Yep. The redheaded kid.
The redheaded kid.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Like the real mean kid producer. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him. That's the same kid.
He's done a bunch of work.
Not really.
Yeah.
He was in Nebraska, but what else was he in?
A lot of stuff.
Kevin Colic. Man in the trunk.
The man in the trunk.
Okay.
He's so sickly.
I got it.
He won't stop crying.
I find this very, very strange, though, and we may have to talk about how this happened. Why is Eve Plum in this film?
Who's Eve Plum?
Come on, Max.
I'm sorry.
Jan Brady.
I didn't watch that stupid show.
Come on. Eve Plum is in this film.
Like the Brady Bunch?
Yes, like the Brady Bunch.
The original Brady Bunch.
Yes, like
not the movie.
The blonde-haired woman in this film, that's Eve Plum.
Hmm.
That's
There's
Jan
a
Brady.
Blonde-haired women.
The mom of the...
Yeah, I guess so.
Not the sister.
Well, the sister.
It was the mother.
The mom. It's got to be the mom.
It was the mom.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Jan Brady. Eve Plum. She completely retired from anything to do with Hollywood for like 30 years, and she pops up in Blue Ruin.
Wow.
It's like, what the hell?
Who knew?
What a comeback.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's get moving along here. Directed by Jeremy Saulnier. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Jeremy Saulnier, Murder Party, Seagirl Run, and Crab Walk. Have no idea. He's trying to make a name for himself.
Mm.
He really comes from, I believe, a lot of more of a cinematography background, more of a visual guy.
I can see that.
Yeah, you can really see it, actually, in this one here, but... Inspires our top three, Max. All these films inspire something. You know this.
Mm-hmm.
Your selection, your film, cue it up. You tell me, what did this inspire top three?
Top three movie drifters.
Ooh, drifters.
Drifters.
Okay, I like that. Okay, guys, let's talk about what the critics gave this film before we move along into what we thought of this film. We do this every week, you know that.
Yeah.
You know it. Max Gumbo Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about IMDb.
Okay, well, let's talk about Blue Ruin, but what about I?
I put it on the T for him. I was waiting for him to see what he'd do with it. Exactly what I wanted. IMDb, Max, what do you think they gave this film, Blue Ruin?
IMDb, I'll go 7.8.
Oh, got the 7 right. Got the point. Nailed it. Way off on the 8.1, 7.1.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on.
Right.
James, Hard Sub Savage.
Yes.
Rotten Tomatoes. We have critics, we have users, we have percentage-wise. Roll with it. Throw it out there. What did they give this film?
Critics, probably 83%.
96% critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Whoa.
Wow. Rotten Tomatoes users, probably 90%.
78%.
Wow.
That's
almost a Coriolanus swing.
It's getting there.
Hey, I would have been right on the users for Rotten Tomatoes.
What good does that do anybody right now?
I'm so proud of
what
you,
Max.
I just wanted to point it out.
You want a consolation prize?
Sure.
You come over and take a free bath at my house. How's that sound?
There you go.
Give me a semi-automatic gun.
Here's what you have. Let's talk about this film, and then we're going to hear a trailer coming back, and we'll tell you what we thought of it. Here's what you have. Blue Ruin, the award-winning American revenge story from writer-director Jeremy Saulnier, I hope I say it right, brings us the harrowing story of Dwight, played by Macon Blair, a homeless drifter who's dropped out of society after the wake of a brutal crime that has left him emotionally incapacitated. But when he learns that the man responsible for his tragic past is about to be released from prison, Dwight returns to his childhood home to carry out an act of vengeance. Proving himself an amateur assassin, he winds up in a brutal fight to protect his estranged family. Blue Ruin received many positive reviews from its critics upon its release, mostly describing it as a smart, stripped-down, and thoroughly grim film. It also received a bit of accolade for its well-shot cinematography and impactful performance from Macon Blair. Yeah.
Macon Blair killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
no
did.
Pun intended.
Yeah, give him a beard, he's good to go. Shave it off, who cares? He's still there, good to go. Yeah. Let's stop right here. Let's take a break, listen to a trailer from the film Blue Room. We'll come back, tell you what we thought of it. So here you go.
I apologize for the mystery. You're not in any trouble. I just thought you should be somewhere safe when you found out. Everything's fine. You'll be fine.
1, 2, 3, 4.
It's an awful thing he did to them.
There it is. There's a piece of the film we're about to talk about right there. We're talking about Blue Ruin 2014. Did I say it? Forgot the year.
2013.
My apologies. But let's talk about some facts and figures about this film, Max. What do you say, Savage?
Sure.
You ready, Hard Sub?
Yeah, let's do it.
Check this out.
All right.
Did you know that Blue Ruin is often a phrase used to infer tragedy? Did you know that?
I did not know that. I was going to bring that up.
No, yeah. I didn't.
Apparently, it's some like some saying somewhere.
Some colloquialism?
Colloquialism.
Yeah, colloquialism,
exactly. Right. That did not come out the way I wanted it to.
Colloquialism.
Colloquialism, yeah.
Right. One of those.
Did you know that Blue Ruin was the same color of Kate Winslet's hair in the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Okay.
He says, what color is that? She goes, oh, that's Blue Ruin. Can you believe that? Well, the irony. Producer.
What?
Did you know that when Dwight stops at the diner to inspect the parked cars, he tests the handle of the Chevy truck? The door is supposed to be locked. He goes on to bust the window out. However, when he tests the handle after he busts the window, did you catch that it was actually unlocked? He busted out the window of a door that was already unlocked.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, one of the many things he did wrong in this film.
Well... There was some.
You sure he didn't reach in and grab the lock or something?
I'm just reading what the freaking thing says here, man. I don't know. Savage.
Yes.
Did you know that when Dwight returns empty cans for money, we see several cans returned, while the deposit ticket only states 20 cents, and it wouldn't be enough for most purchases, let alone the map he buys?
Right.
So somewhere between there and when he buys the map, something doesn't add up. He must have had loose change in his pocket.
Yeah.
Director's cut.
Yeah, director's cut. Yeah, so I didn't get a whole lot of trivia, but some interesting nuggets there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Some nuggets.
Max, you queued this film up. All right, so let's talk about what you gave this. And by the way, we don't use thumbs up or thumbs down.
No. That's vengeful.
It's so vengeful. It's spiteful.
Yeah,
it is.
Max, what are we going to use? We're not going to use stars or anything like that. So what, inspired by this film, are we going to use as currency tonight?
Currency tonight is 1 through 10 bloody shirts.
Bloody shirts.
Bloody shirts.
There are a lot of them in this movie.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's like everybody's shirt got bloody.
Well, some of them weren't even his shirts. He would steal them off of clothes racks and stuff.
And they'd still get bloody.
Still get bloody.
Some of them didn't even have people with blood on them.
This guy's going to mess up some shirts in this film. Right. All right, so 1 to 10 bloody shirts.
Take you down, shirt.
What you going to go with?
I'm giving it 8 bloody shirts.
8 bloody shirts.
I really, really like this movie. Liked it a lot.
Yeah, definitely some stuff to stare at, no doubt about it.
You could almost work as a silent film.
God, I thought this, getting ahead of myself, I thought the same exact thing. Absolutely.
The whole time I was watching, I was like, man. I mean, it's 15, 16 minutes in before there's any actual real dialogue.
Yeah, what you're looking at is telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue really isn't pacing it.
No, and that's the way a movie should be.
Yeah.
Visual medium, tell it visually.
Yeah, and you can tell that someone who's into visual mediums is at the helm here for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 8 from you, man. 8 bloody shirts.
Yeah.
Savage.
Yeah.
I'm going to go straight to you on this one, man.
Right.
How many bloody shirts are you going to pass along to Blue Ruin?
I'll do one more. I'll go 9. This is something else. It's been a long time since I've seen a film like this.
Yeah.
We'll get into it, but yeah, it's impactful. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's tragic. It's all the things that you want. It runs through the gamut of emotions.
Yeah, well acted, all of it.
All of it. Yeah. All of it, except for, you know, happiness and delight. There's none of that in there, but it's a 9. I'll give it 9 bloody shirts.
All right, good for you, man. Yeah, definitely a, like you say, impactful film.
Yeah.
You feel it, that's for sure. Producer, up to you, man. We're talking about bloody shirts. We're talking about Blue Ruin. We're talking about how many you give it. What is it?
I may be convinced to go up a little bit more than this, but I'm only going to give it a 9.
Oh.
He's going to give it a 9. I thought you might like this film.
I love this film. It's, wow. After I watched it, I'm like, I want to watch this again.
How many times did you watch
this
film?
I only watched it once.
Okay. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about some scenes here.
I love this movie.
I can't wait to talk about some scenes with this from you. All right. All right, leaves it up to me. We have a 9. We have an 8. We have a 9.
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you what I got. I have a bit of a schizo review for this. I'm not sure from what angle I should look at it. I'm kind of with Max on this thing, too. I think this is a brilliant exercise in filmmaking.
Yeah.
No doubt. Gorgeous, gripping, polished. And I think some of these scenes are truly fantastic. Scenes. But, you know, I've watched this thing 3 times. I watched this a while back, all the way through. Remember, I said I want to watch this again. I've watched this start to finish 3 solid times. I just don't think it's that a great of a movie. And I kind of was anticipating that I might feel that way. I want to use the word exercise again. I think this is far more of a rehearsal in filmmaking than it is in making a film. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I don't say it as a terrible thing because I truly think that's what the project was about. I think that the guys here, they wanted to demonstrate what they could do. And I know he wrote this thing. The same guy that directed it wrote it. But I think he really wanted to have a launching pad to say, look what I can do with my visual aptitude, with my cinematography. And they nailed it. I mean, someone needs to take notice. Macon Blair, Jeremy Saulnier, these are talented people. And even if I can't call it a fantastic film, I think it succeeds because I can't wait to see what they do next. You know what I'm saying? So I think the project was a success. But, you know, to be honest, you can tell it was written and directed by a cinematographer. It's beautiful. I don't think it's a knock to say that. But, you know, first time I watched it, I was really intrigued because I didn't know what was going to happen. That's what made it a great watch for me. But by the second and third time, there's not a whole lot there to keep pulling out. Once you know what's going to happen, you're not left with, I wonder what this dialogue really means, or I wonder what I can pull out of this scene. It's just one big punch, and that's kind of it. It was a great punch. The performances are fantastic. Love the pieces, but I can only go 7 here.
All right.
I could possibly get up to 8, but I think I'm just going to kind of temper myself with 7.
All right.
And maybe I'm seeing it wrong. I don't know.
No, you're seeing it how you see it.
But it's a gorgeous film.
It is that.
I would give this guy Cameron $1 million if I had either one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
still
so,
a 33.
Not bad. I might get up to 8. You guys can maybe tell me a couple things here and there that might kind of push me. It's a strong 7.
Strong 7's pretty good. 7's...
Is it? Okay.
7's good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not horrible by any means.
But I think a great film you can revisit and keep getting and keep getting and
I
keep...
get what your point. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's probably why I went with an 8. I mean, once you've seen it, hey, you've seen it. There's not a whole lot to go back and... There's not little subtleties to pick up.
No,
on,
no,
know?
it's just so much exterior. The exterior is great, but it's just exterior. You know what I'm saying?
I like that. That's one of the things I really liked about the movie, though.
Yeah,
was it was so straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't muddle everything up with these little side plots. And,
yeah,
you know, somebody else might have been tempted to, I don't know, let's throw in a romantic relationship with some woman he meets or re-meets when he comes to town. He sees his high school sweetheart in the drugstore or something. Yeah, That's not what I don't want to see all that. That's not what the movie's about. It's straightforward, completely linear, and there's no missteps. There's no side tracks. No nothing. None of that stuff. And that's one of the things I really, really, really liked about it.
I'm glad he said that because in the end, I'm thinking, okay, I liked a lot more than I didn't. Yeah. He nailed exactly why I did like this film. It's honest. It's just, here it is, guys. Enjoy it. It's a crazy, bumpy, wild ride.
Yeah.
Here you go. Hold on. Keep both your feet in the car. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into some more scenes, too, Max. Looking back at this film, we keep using the word impactful. Mm-hmm. And it comes at you straight away. You know, this is something you're going to want to look at. And it's kind of like what it introduces itself as. What comes to mind when you first think about this film?
I don't know. I was just thinking about this a minute ago when you said we want to talk about some scenes. But to go back to what I said, it's so straightforward and so linear. It almost plays like this long, flowing one scene. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
almost.
There's hardly any little breaks that separate scenes here. I mean, there are.
Yeah.
But they all play like they're just one cohesive unit.
Well, the movie doesn't take place over a year or even a week or a month.
Like,
two
or 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the one scene that sticks out with me is when he finally lets the guy out of the trunk of the car.
Oh man!
And they're sitting there talking, and he's got the gun on him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great, and then you know when you see what happens.
Yeah.
And his friend, I had to wait for him to aim at you to make it legal. Like, wow, this guy's really on his toes. You know?
Yeah.
His head.
Don't worry about that. The critters will eat that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that scene. I like the last scene, the big Mexican standoff, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
That was really well done.
The scenes are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody can deny that.
No.
They're set up and delivered. Savage, go. What do you got for this film?
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
And it's dark and it's somber.
Mm-hmm.
And Macon Blair is just, there's a fragileness to him. There's a tenderness to him that, and you can tell that that character, Dwight, he's damaged. He's been damaged badly. And all of this is established with no words.
Mm-hmm.
No words at all. And then once you the revelation of, you know, his backstory comes through with the police officer.
Yeah.
He's
sleeping in the car.
Yeah.
Cop comes up, taps on the window. And you're thinking, okay, he's going to jail because he's a wanted man. And that's not the case. That was kind of a surprise there.
It was very much a surprise to me. And she knew him, and they were like friends or whatever, and wanted him to be in a safe place. I thought the story was pretty good. I mean, I've never thought about like the nuance, like you're saying, like the revisit.
Yeah.
Because I think some films, it's the initial reaction. I mean, that therein lies their power.
Okay.
You said, it's the one punch. And if that punch is good enough, then that is success. And I think that this punched like that. It's startlingly beautiful. And I don't know if any of y'all picked up, but there's something blue in every single shot.
Yeah, there is.
Every single shot.
It's funny you say that. I looked for blue things because I thought someone might try to play on that.
Yeah. And once you start noticing that, it becomes kind of distracting because then you start looking for it. It's like, is there something blue in this shot? Is there
so the blue started ruining the movie?
The blue started ruining the film. Okay, so, yeah, you're really pulling into, man, this is a good-looking film. Because it smacks you. Right away, it's like, man.
Well, and I think Macon Blair sells it, too. The tender damage that he has in his eyes. It's like he's on the verge of crying. You know, this is a man pushed to the extreme with very, very little exposition. I mean, the exposition that is done is like Max said. It's like, boom, 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 here you go. And maybe that goes to your point. There's no nuance to it. And, you know, the exposition is, okay, we move the story up here. We move the story up here. We move the story up here.
Yeah.
And then it's a lot of visuals and a lot of just kind of emotive work.
Yeah,
but I think the going back to how the story was told visually and saying that there's no nuance, I think the big part of the way that the story was told was through nuance, like when he's sitting in his car,
visual nuance, not expositional nuance.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But a lot of what we learn about him is through that. I mean, you hardly learn anything about this guy from exposition.
Yeah.
Hardly anything.
Right? Only when he's talking to his sister.
Yeah. Or I mean, when even when he's leaving, he throws the newspaper on the seat, and you're like, oh, okay, well, now I get what's going on. Or when they show him in that scene where he's sitting in a car at night, and he's sitting there reading.
Yeah.
You immediately go, oh, this guy's not a dumb junkie
Dripper.
Bum or something.
At all. That's a good scene there, and also leads right back to Savage's scene with the cop, because when she taps on the window, you're thinking, is a SWAT team going to come? Is this guy a murderer? Is he wanted for slashing somebody to death? And you realize that he's not a threat to even the cops. He's not a threatening guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see him reading this book, and you think, okay, there's some depth to this character.
Right.
And that's all they give you, is that the cop's not afraid of him, and he's reading a book. He's obviously not a serial killer.
Right. And he's riding around in a car riddled with bullet holes.
Yeah, what's that all about?
That was apparently his parents' car.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I
may have to go to eight. You're right. Okay, there's something I didn't catch right there, yeah.
He got the car, she got the house.
I got to go wait on this film. I'm sorry. There is a bit more here than I thought.
Yeah, right.
I want to go. Give me the eight. Okay. What am I doing? Yeah, okay. Producer, we haven't talked to you yet. You like this film. You say you could even go to 10. You dig this. And I know
love this movie.
When we get talking about the scenes here, especially the leg, I know your eyes are going to light up.
Yeah, right.
Because one thing I'll say, and I'll shut up about a lot of the effects here, some of the best use of blood I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, those weren't just blood bags. Those were some great practical effects.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Enough of that. I say that, producer, because I know you like that sort of thing. But talk to me about what stands out for this film that you love so much, Blue Ruin.
The first 20 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, from the moment the cop tapped on his window to the fact that you knew something was going on, that he was either running towards something or he was running away from it once he got that car fixed back up, which I love the fact that he had, like, a battery hidden.
Yeah. That car wasn't broken down.
Yeah, it wasn't broken down. It was ready to go.
It was ready to go.
He just had all that stuff waiting. And the moment he found out this guy was getting out, I mean, I was wondering, is he going to run away from all this, or is he actually running towards it? And then when he seen him pull up to this prison and start chasing the guys, and then him waiting in that bathroom.
And making some of the stupidest mistakes I've ever seen people in my life make.
Right.
Yeah.
But, God, just that intensity building up.
Yeah.
That was just mind-blowing to me. I love that. The 20 minutes sold me right then and there, and I was hooked from then on out.
I was, too. I was at a 10 at that point in the film.
Yeah. My God, I can keep going about
it. You know, that scene right there is so good when he's in that restroom.
Yeah.
Because you keep saying there's such a tenderness in his eyes.
But a damage, too.
Go back and look when he finally catches a glimpse of that guy before he sticks the thing in his skull.
That's hate.
There's so much hate in his eyes. Mm-hmm. I think that's it's a great performance, an example of it right there, because it was so stark to see that much hate in someone you were convinced was so soft.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there. See, Savage? See?
Yeah.
And they freeze. Producer just pulled up IMDb, a still of the shot I'm talking about.
It's like Gollum.
Yeah. Listen, why don't we take a break right now, catch a quick piece of this film. I think we'll pull something out for you.
We'll pull some of the language out.
Yeah.
We'll pull at least a minute of 3 minutes worth of dialogue.
Yeah. We're going to go hide out in the trunk for a while.
Right.
We'll come back in a minute or two, get into some more of Blue Ruin right here.
So, why now? Wade Cleland gets released.
Well, I thought there'd be something on the news, but there's nothing. I killed him. Wade Cleland, I killed him.
When?
I think yesterday.
Dwight!
I thought he'd kill me first.
I'm glad he didn't. And I'm glad he's dead. And I hope he's suffering.
Excuse me. You gotta catch up on yours? I don't.
Q Filmcast talking about that film, this film, Blue Ruin 2014.
Yeah, that one.
Was it 2014 or 2013?
2013.
Oh, come on. Let's talk about some scenes just a bit more. Max, go. What do you got?
The hospital scene really bummed me out.
Why?
I felt so bad for the guy. You know, he got shot in the leg with the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tried, you know, when he had to cut it off with the hacksaw.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about that, because that's one, like any film, sometimes you have one big, you know, hinge. No, it's brilliant. One big hinge. People are going to say, oh, the film where the guy had to hack off the arrow in his leg.
Mm-hmm.
Get into that and go into the hospital from there.
Well, he got the guy shot him with the crossbow. He's got an arrow in his leg. He gets away from them. And he goes to the drugstore and he's buying all that stuff and crazy alcohol glue. And crazy glue
with bloody money.
Yeah, and yeah, blood's got the money's got blood all over it.
Right.
And then he goes and sits in his car. Where? No, he went to somebody. Did he break into somebody's house?
No, he drove out.
Yeah, he just tried to try it. He drove out into the woods.
Yeah,
and he's sitting there trying to get that arrow out, and he pours the damn alcohol all over it. And you just see the struggle of him trying anything he can to get that arrow out and not have to go to the hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it just cuts to that scene of him walking into the hospital.
That's the best scene of the movie.
And leaning up against the wall and saying, what did he say? I had an accident with my leg.
Bam. He just falls over at the front desk. Yeah.
I felt so bad for the guy.
That's an
I
intense
felt terrible
scene.
For him.
Oh, it was the best.
I mean, I felt the pain in that scene. My leg was going numb this movie.
I love that scene because that's exactly how it would go down.
It reminded me of the scene in No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
Where Anton goes into the drugstore and starts grabbing the stuff off the shelf.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, in any other kind of action movie, he would have just pulled the arrow out and went about his business, you know.
Put some gunpowder in there.
Yeah, tied a shirt around it, and he would have just been. But no, you get shot with something with a decent arrowhead on it, you're not pulling it out.
And I was thinking to myself, well, at first I thought, why does he want to pull the arrow out?
That's what I thought. You would push it through.
Yeah.
It depends on the arrowhead.
Yeah.
You know how bad it is when you resort to, I think I'm going to take the arrow and pinch it off with the door of my shot-up car. Oof. And just yank it out.
Oh.
That scene went on uncomfortably long, but perfectly so,
yeah.
To where I gripped the side of the couch. But, yeah, that is a fantastic scene.
Yeah,
he goes into the hospital, and you feel sorry for him.
He's just got sweat pouring down his face.
Yeah.
And you can just see the misery he's in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Producer, let's talk more about, you say the first 20 minutes of the scene. I want to focus on this just a bit more because are you talking about when it leads right up to what, where he ends up at the hospital, and you talking about when they basically take over the house that he's at?
No, where
and they pin him down in the house and
no,
all
the
that?
No, the first 20 minutes is just where he goes into the club
restaurant.
And he gets away and he meets the little kid on the side of the road or whatever.
All right, well, let's talk about that for a minute. He's going to follow this guy from prison.
Yeah.
Right? And he follows him all the way to whatever that was.
A diner.
Bar.
Roadhouse.
Dive bar.
Yeah.
Follows the guy in. He didn't have a plan.
Oh, he had a plan.
He did not have a plan. He didn't know that there would be a back door to get into. He didn't know he would have to hide into the stall.
Yeah.
He just went in there with a knife, and I'm thinking, this guy's just shooting from the hip.
He had an objective.
He had an objective.
You're right. No plan, but an objective.
But it added to the tension because, you know, this is just, he didn't even know where it's going to go.
No.
How am I supposed to know where it's going to go? Effective scene for sure, Adam. What did you like about it the most?
Well, after he killed the guy, the best part is that.
Spoilers.
Well, it's kind of a given at this point.
Have you listened to the show? We spoil everything.
But it's the scene afterwards when he escapes and he meets the kid on the side of the road that's in the limo, and he said, oh, Wade didn't kill your dad.
Yeah, the plot twist.
And then it's like,
something
else is going on here.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm talking about. That's where it ends, and that's where it's so fantastic at the beginning.
Yeah, it bothered me that he was so dumb, though.
Yeah, well,
he wasn't
speaking
dumb.
Of dumb, the one dumb thing I hated is the fact when he was in the house waiting for these guys to finally show up, he had a pitchfork. Really?
That's all he got.
That was horrible.
When that's all you got, a pitchfork is a pretty effective weapon.
Yeah.
You should have looked for a meat worked tenderizer.
Worked for Frankenstein.
It did work for Frankenstein.
Works for Aquaman.
I actually had a list of all the things. I said, that's a trident.
Trident.
Did you actually stab someone with a trident?
Worked for him.
Yeah.
Right.
You should have looked at your next and get a meat tenderizer.
Well,
there you go.
You know, I had a list of things I thought this guy did that were completely stupid. First of all, he gets the pitchfork at him, and then he leans it up against the wall and leaves it. What did you do? He has the light.
He was nervous.
And I've seen this in movies before, too, where someone has the flashlight and someone's coming after him, and they just hide the end of it with their hand.
Right.
Turn the light off.
Right.
He tried to. Because I noticed that, too. I was like,
he couldn't find the button or the button
another,
wouldn't work.
And that bothered me.
Rhymes for Young Ghouls or something?
Rhymes for Young Ghouls. And I was thinking to myself, okay, is this a filmmaker just saying, well, it's more tense this way?
Yeah.
Is he just doing that because it makes more tense with the light on his face? Turn the light thing on. Turn the flashlight off. And then he stabs the tire, cuts his own hand nearly off.
I love that.
You did love that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you love it? Because it shows that this is a
guy
who's...
Because it's real. It doesn't fall into these tropes of things. It's like, if you go to stab a tire with a knife, tires are hard, and they're
real
reinforced
hard
with steel belts.
And
you know?
It didn't have a little handle on it that could stop your hand from sliding down it.
It slid his hand, and it's like, that's what would happen.
Yeah.
The same thing with the arrow. That's why I love that so much. You're not going to pull that out of your leg.
Hey, another scene, another thing to get into, too, and the other characters in this film. We've talked a bit about Macon Blair.
Yeah.
There are a couple other good performances in this film.
Yeah, the friend.
One guy in a trunk. One guy who's his buddy, high school buddy.
Yeah.
Benny. Let's talk a bit about that, Max. Those are two pretty strong characters in this film. One scene that always gets pushed to the front when people talk about this is the trunk scene.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it. What you got?
I loved it.
Yeah.
How long was that guy in the trunk? 24
days?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't in there 15 days.
I mean, probably 30 hours.
Well, he was in there for a while. Yeah.
Well, shoot, he was in there long enough for him to go get his leg worked on at the hospital.
He didn't break his leg.
No, I'm talking about he went to get the arrow
taken. Oh, to get the arrow taken. I thought you were talking about the guy in the trunk. Yeah, he was in there a while.
Yeah.
And I love that part where he's sitting there trying to get the arrow out of his leg, and he's got banging on the trunk, and he says, "Let me out of here, let me out." And he says, "Not till I get a gun."
I got your gun.
And that's when he goes to his little high school buddy, because he saw him in the ROTC book, in the yearbook.
Yep.
Yeah.
Benny, the guy from Home Alone, goes and finds him. He's DJing at the club.
Yeah.
Follows him back out to his trunk. I'm sorry, his trunk. Trunk, truck. We get
truck.
All this stuff.
Right.
But there's a great scene, too. And, you know, there's a bit of a reveal right there. Because did you catch the fact that he said, "Oh, man, I like your truck"? He said, "Yeah, you know, the first 200 miles in this truck, I spent driving around town putting up your poster on trees and on light poles."
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, wow, there's a quick little snippet. But that gave me a lot.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
This was a guy who was known in the community, was obviously kind of... I wouldn't say respected, but people cared about him.
Yeah, he had friends, he had people.
And he just left in his parents' bullet-ridden car.
Yeah.
So he meets Benny, Max, and then Benny, we get a bit of a lead into that character. We find out a bit about him. He likes guns.
He's got an arsenal.
Yeah.
Well, he's got some. But again, it goes to the story. Everything's so lean. I mean, it's like most of the storytelling is done visually, and just the very little exposition of dialogue, it just pushes the story where the dialogue has to do it.
It all served a purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Most of the dialogue is between him and Benny. If there's chunks of it, it's that.
Yeah. It's very few chunks. There's the chunk between him and the sister, him and Benny, and then him and the family, and then him and the trunk guy.
Do you think they used Benny as a bit of a catalyst to give you insights into Dwight? I think they did. Because from Benny, you learn how he was missing and the reaction of people when he was gone. You learned a bit about who he was in high school.
Yeah.
You learned a bit about his background with his family. Benny's basically narrating the history of Dwight to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a big chunk of the film. Now you have the scene between Benny, which is set up nice, with Dwight, and then you have the guy in the trunk. And what was his name? I wrote it down at one point.
Teddy,
yeah. That whole thing
was
pretty crazy, man. They popped the lid on that. Did you see Teddy ever having a chance to get the gun away?
No.
From Dwight. What did you think, Savage?
No, and it's a brilliant line. It's and this is probably the line of the movie. Mm-hmm. The guy with the gun gets to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I got the gun. You got the truth. You get the truth.
Right.
And that's one more thing you can put on Dwight's list of mulligans and goofs. How do you let the guy get the gun? He has a broken leg. He's in the trunk.
Well.
Come on.
He didn't have a broken leg.
But the other reason that scene is so crucial is you find out what really happened.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you find out his brother's not the one that killed his parents.
Yeah.
It's the dad that did it, Big Dwight or whatever they call
him. Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk a bit about the end, though.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the conclusion of this film. Big punch right there.
Yeah.
He breaks into this house. We just touched on it a bit, Randy. He goes and He just kind of camps out waiting for these people. That's where he actually had a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, barricade. And
took the guns.
Yeah.
Put the jar of pennies up against the door.
Yeah. Didn't take all the guns, but yeah, he kind of set up shop. Mm-hmm. The ultimate trap. I like that.
I would have kept the guns, honestly.
He should have brought Benny from Home Alone with him. He could have shown him how to do it right.
Yeah, that's when he needed Benny.
You need a sniper. No, I liked it because he gave him the opportunity to make a decision.
Yeah.
And then once they proved that what their decision was, you know, when the cycle of vengeance continues,
right,
then he's still engaged in the cycle. So... I like that. I like that it just wasn't, he just didn't, you know, murder them as soon as he walked in the mm-hmm. door.
He gave them a choice.
Yeah.
He kind of rubbed their nose in.
Oh, and that whole setup with the cell phone.
Yeah.
On the answering machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was brilliant.
And also, again, the way it's shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's they're in the background, faded out, and it just shows the glee in his face on the side of the wall, enjoying every second of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting satisfaction out of that.
Well, and the intensity of his situation. I mean, he knew where he was. I mean, it's chances of walking out of here are not very high.
And no. It was a suicide mission.
Kind of. And, again, it goes back to the testament to Macon Blair's acting ability. I thought he sold this thing through and through the entire film. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about all these scenes, and it's easy to forget that this thing is stunningly beautiful throughout the entire thing. You can't take your eyes off of it. It's just, it's either impactful or tragic or just somber or surreal. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to behold.
You know what else they have? It's a great use of music. Or not music, but sound.
Yeah.
The sound is effective here.
Yeah.
You can hear things in the background muffled just like he'd hear them.
Yeah.
Very intense at times when it needed to be intense.
Well, and it's reflective of his mindset at certain times as well.
I like that. Hear that mm-hmm. Max's mindset.
Mm-hmm.
The score and the sound in this thing really kind of pulled out his mindset a lot.
Yeah.
Even when there was dialogue, a lot of it was so muted you couldn't tell what they were saying.
Let's talk about the final shot, final 2 minutes of this film. Adam, did you like that pretty well?
The reveal and all that stuff?
Not just the reveal, but it ends with a big smack across the head. He's laying on the ground. The keys are in the car. The keys are in the car. And when you say the reveal, you find out that the kid is actually his father's kid.
Yeah.
Is what you're talking about. I love that because of the visual aspect of it. It shows tracking shots of the Cleland family going across the wall, and you see them when they were happy before any of this vengeance came about. It showed happy family photos, and it bleeds into his family's house, his sister's house, with a tracking shot of all their family photos. And that's kind of how the film ends, very very gut-wrenching like that. Did you pick up on that?
No, I didn't. Yeah. Are you saying that the kid is his brother?
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, the kid's his brother.
I didn't pick up on that.
I did.
I grabbed it right away. I guess it
seemed old.
No, William.
No, they kept
the guy that shot him.
Yeah, the guy that shot him was actually his brother.
No, I didn't pick up on that at all.
Remember, he had cancer. He couldn't get it up.
Right.
And so, the wife went off to cheat with this with.
No, I understand the relationship.
And so far, therefore, boom.
Yeah, I picked up that Billy was the half brother of Dwight. Yeah.
That's why he let him go.
That's why I let him go. See?
Even more nuance.
He figured it out.
Wow.
You see, you found out that he was the brother, and I just found out that his leg really wasn't broken in the trunk. We're all finding out stuff here. Right. But I did like the ending. At first, I didn't know if I did. And then it's real strange, Max. What am I looking at the end? It shows his sister's neighborhood in complete disarray. And he talked about a storm coming in.
Yeah.
And it showed like power lines down and trees busted down. And then it focuses on one arrow laying in the street.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
great. With the jogger running by. What was that? That was kind of...
The storm was over.
A great shot.
Yeah, and I think it's also reflective of, you know, these things they pass.
Yeah.
And these little remnants of what you leave behind are inconsequential to the whole big picture.
There's a lot to talk about this film. Now that we've gotten into it, I'm thinking, wait a second, this is effective because now I'm thinking of things that we didn't talk about. Like, for example, the scene with the sister. We haven't talked about the scene with the sister.
No.
I mean, we've talked about blood. We've talked about headshots. We've talked about ugly strippers. But there's some good stuff between him and the sister, too, Max. Mm-hmm. Remember the restaurant scene?
Yeah, it was great. That
I mean, you talk about performance by Macon Blair.
Yeah.
They're sitting there, and he doesn't know how to even talk to this woman.
Interact with
He didn't know how to interact.
People anymore.
And then he said that. I'm not used to talking as much.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the guy next to him asked if he could borrow the ketchup off his table.
Ruined it.
Yeah, and you could just feel like, ooh, that's not the time you ask these people for this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try that next time I go out to dinner and I hear someone breaking up. Can hand me the mustard, please?
You'll probably do that, too.
Oh, goodness. Oh, well.
Interesting stuff. You know, we could probably talk about this a bit, but we can't.
Yeah.
I have a couple things to bring up. First of all, watch this in a dark room. It is a really dark movie.
It is.
No lights on. I had some problems watching it with the lights on, and I actually had to turn them off because... Because
you were scared? What are you saying?
No, no. I turned the lights off because it was kind of hard to see some of the stuff in the background.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of bright, actually, in a lot of ways.
And well, other than the nighttime shots.
Okay.
And that and the poster, the first time I saw this movie poster, I swore it was Paul McCartney on the poster with a beard.
Really?
Okay. Wings.
Yeah, wings.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we should fly along.
He had the big beard days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about Blue Ruin, too, by the way. 2013. I think I keep saying it wrong. 2013.
Yeah.
And, there you go right there. Yeah, bit to get into for sure. It's on Netflix. I say we could all recommend this one, right?
I think so. Definitely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just do it, Blue Ruin.
Well, let's get into our top three, Max. What do you say, Gumbo?
I say let's get into our top three after a clip.
Yeah, one more time. Here's a piece of the film, Blue Ruin. Oh, my God. That is Paul McCartney with a beard. Producer just pulled up exactly what he's talking about. It's zombified Paul McCartney. Nice. Nice way to end it. All right, let's get back into this, though. Our top three. Drifters in film, as inspired by Blue Ruin. Here's one last piece of the film. We'll get back, and we'll get into our top threes. Here you are.
How about first we open up that belly? You want to see your gut steam? Must have something in there since you took Wade from us. And for that, your sister...
One. Yes.
Sorry, I had to wait for him to aim before I could shoot. It had to be legal, at least on my part.
His head. That's what bullets do. Jesus, I'm not impressed. You missed from 2 yards? Hey, let's go, man. I'd like him off my property.
Q Filmcast talking about Blue Ruin 2013. There's a piece of it. Inspires our top three drifters.
Drifters.
A little bit of a drifter going in here into town. Yeah. Someone just kind of moseying into town.
Yeah.
Unexpected.
Or drifting.
Don't know who it is.
Tokyo Drift.
Yeah. That's the last time we'll bring up that joke. No play on words there.
Okay.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Max.
Yes.
Max Gumbo Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Number three for you. Drifters in film inspired by this one, Blue Ruin. Go.
I'm going to be the obvious guy on this list. I went the obvious ones. I had to.
What is it?
Number three is John Rambo.
Oh,
John Rambo. Classic drifter.
Yeah.
First Blood.
I mean, the whole thing is started because he's a drifter. I don't want your kind in my town. You're just passing through, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
I immediately thought of John Rambo.
I didn't even think about that.
All right, number three, Rambo for you, yeah. Absolutely. Maybe the quintessential drifter.
Yeah.
Nope. He's number three.
Producer, let's go to you. Let's go to you right now. Number three, drifters in film. What's yours?
I'm going
to
go from Man and Boy from The Road.
Drifters?
Yeah. Okay. Father-son thing there.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't think of it as a typical drifter in the Western sense, but yeah, they're drifting along. Post-apocalyptic drifters.
They're drifters, dude.
Yeah.
All right, good deal. Nicely done. Number three there. Savage.
Yeah.
Burn It Out, number three.
Nick Nolte, Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
I thought of that, too.
Oh, I didn't even think of that one.
Yeah.
Making Richard Dreyfuss' life hell.
Yeah. He's a drifter.
And he's jumping in his pool and stuff.
Peeing on his flower beds.
Dumb dog that farts all the time.
Haven't seen that in a long time.
I know, right?
Another great beard in film.
Yeah, that's good. He's all right. Nick Nolte.
You tell you what I'm going to go with. Let me look at my list. I have different ones to choose from.
All right.
Okay, I think I'm going to go with the comedy angle. Max, you may part ways with me on this, or maybe it's on your list.
I don't know.
Nathan R. Johnson was a drifter.
Mm.
Yes, come on.
Eventually.
Oh, come on. Anytime you
he
end
was.
Up
he was
in
a drifter.
Anytime you end up in a carnival, you're a drifter.
Yeah. Pumping gas,
from a carnival,
then in a carnival
to a gas station.
Yeah. He was a drifter.
There, I gotta say,
and then
a drifter.
He wound up as a bum at the end.
Well, I'll take it.
You got my name on your ass. More people seen that than the phone book. Huh? Me?
Nathan Johnson.
Oh, man.
You stole it. I gotta change it.
Yeah, sorry about that. I got to it first. Max Gumbo Johnson.
Number two.
Go. What is it?
Blondie, the man with no name. Man with no name trilogy.
I don't even know what this is.
Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yeah. Dollars. I'm sorry. Duh.
Just for dollars, for a few dollars more, and good, the bad, and the ugly.
He's been a drifter a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but that's like the greatest drifter.
Like High Plains Drifter.
They made a movie called High Plains Drifter. And yet, I went with the man with no name.
Right. Because he was a drifter.
Somebody has to say Eastwood.
Yeah.
You have
to. He just did.
I did.
And he did. Well done.
Could have picked Pale Rider.
You could have. I guess he was kind of I wasn't really a drifter and Unforgiven.
Yeah.
No, he had a house and kids.
Yeah, you're right. What am I talking about?
And Sally gave him the evil eye.
Yeah. Well, she's Indian, you know. They don't trust people.
I don't think she quite likes me. Yeah. Sally?
Give me the evil eye.
She gave me the evil eye.
Producer, I'm giving you the evil eye because I want to know what your number two is. So tell me.
Mad Max.
Yeah.
He is a drifter.
That was on your list, wasn't it?
It's my number one, Max Rockatansky. I'm not changing it either.
He's not going to change it. Okay.
All right, man.
Savage, it's your turn.
Yeah, number two.
Yeah, what is it?
Joaquin Phoenix in The Master.
Oh, that's a good one.
God, how did I not get that? That's a great answer.
Freddie Quill.
Yeah. You know what he does with the pitchfork? You know how useful that could be to him, right?
And you know how you get rid of crabs.
Yeah, you know how you get rid of crabs, right? Yeah. Not a pitchfork. I meant an ice pick. Sorry.
Yeah.
And some lighter fluid.
And make some liquor.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just a deviant. He was just kind of a soulless bastard.
He was.
Well, you know, he found his soul through his master.
Yeah. I don't think he did.
You're all number right. two, sir.
My number two. How about Michael Myers from Halloween?
I don't think he was a drifter.
He was a drifter. He was drifting all over the place.
No, he stayed in Haddonfield.
You don't think that's a good answer?
Yeah, he was pretty much institutionalized most of his life.
Forget that. Can I give you a different answer?
Sure.
You have to.
How about The Hitcher?
There's a drifter.
There you go.
Is that better?
There you go. That's better.
Okay.
More Rutger Hauer.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. Pretty good film, though, wasn't it?
I love
Sean Bean.
You think it holds up?
The Hitcher.
Oh, don't know.
Yeah,
no,
The Hitcher does.
James.
The Hitcher holds up. Not the remake now.
Yeah, come on, I like Sean Bean.
I like Sean Bean.
I was thinking Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, Rutger Hauer.
Tying that girl up.
Between
the
those trucks.
Ooh.
Oh, wow, that was brutal.
Yeah, he was a drifter.
He was crazy.
Yeah.
He was a hitcher.
He was a hitcher and a drifter.
Number one.
Number one's for you, Max Gumbo Johnson. What's it going to be? Oh, we just talked about it.
Max Rockatansky.
You get one chance. You get a do-over if you wish, sir. Are you going to come down off the
nope.
Max?
Nope. Mad Max is my number one.
In what film?
If I have to pick one film, I would have to go with The Road Warrior.
Yeah, right. he was more drifting in that one.
He was drifting.
Yeah, okay, good answer. He's all about the Mad Max these days.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that, my personal plea to you is to please pay money and go see that in the theater.
Fury Road.
Please go see
it. It's worth your money.
It's so awesome.
Adam, let's get on with it. Number ones, we're talking about drifters in film. Okay, inspired by Blue Ruin, the film we talked about. What's it going to be?
I don't know if I want to go. I want to say Ford Prefect from Hitchhiker's Guide, but I'm going to have to go with Tramp from Lady and the Tramp.
Okay, I thought
maybe. Look at that. Look at it. He's bringing in some Lady and the Tramp action.
I had one in mind that I thought for sure was going to be your number one. I thought it was going to be Gonzo from the Muppet movies.
Was he a drifter? He really wasn't a drifter. He was dropped off from space.
Okay.
He's a gonzo.
No, he likes the Muppets, so I figured that
I don't like that space gonzo theory. I don't subscribe to that.
He's just a weirdo.
Right.
I want to subscribe to your number one, Sam.
Yeah,
what
I mean, it's got to be Clint Eastwood, High Plains Drifter.
Sure it does. That was going to be my number one.
It's
but
High
I,
Plains Drifter, man.
I didn't want to be responsible
for
that.
Which is an awesome
that.
Movie.
It's a great movie. 1973. I wouldn't mind watching that again.
Ooh,
it's been a little while.
So good, so good. So
we
good.
Had the VHS. I mean, it was Betamax. I watched it like 15 times between the years 1981 and 1984. But it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Good movie.
Yeah. And he's still the man with no name, right?
I don't. Did they?
Yeah.
I don't think they
no, that was
said
an
his name.
That was an American version of it. Yeah,
they never said his name in that.
So High Plains Drifter, number one.
Good job, you did it. You did my heavy lifting. I wanted someone else to say it. Right. You know what my number one is? I love this Drifter,
David Banner.
Nah, what? Yeah, it could be.
It's a good
but
one.
He was never a drifter in the movies like he was in the TV show.
Not really. Yeah.
Every show he was drifting on out the credits.
I know.
My number one is Martin Sheen in Badlands.
Oh, that's a good one.
That guy. You ever seen that?
Comes into
town, drifts up into town, takes the guy's daughter, whisks her away, commits crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going Martin Sheen in Badlands.
That's
crazy.
Good,
both of those High Plains Drifter and Badlands inspired songs.
Okay.
High Plains Drifter and Badlands.
sing me these songs.
I'm not singing.
Okay.
You know
Bruce Springsteen, Badlands.
Sure, yeah. Beastie Boys, High Plains Drifter.
There you go.
But speaking of songs, Max. The
don't forget, send us your submissions for our new theme song. I want a rap song, but you can send whatever you want. Put our names in it. Make it clever.
Yeah, once again, back from what we talked about earlier, we want to have a new theme song.
Yeah.
We want someone out there, listener-wise, come up with something. We don't care what it is. How about like an old barbershop quartet? I want like a barbershop quartet.
Why not?
You want rap. Adam, you want spoken word or something stupid, probably.
No, God,
what do you want?
No.
Maybe we get Henry Rollins to do us a song.
That would be awesome. Henry, if you're listening, do us a song.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That would be awesome.
So we challenge you, listeners. We don't care where you're at on the globe. We don't care. You come up with something, we will turn the cue over to you. Just go to thecuefilmcast.net.
There you go.
Yeah, do that. But let's talk about next week's show. You want to do that?
Sure.
I think we're going to turn it over to the producer for next week. And once again, this was Blue Ruin.
Yeah, awesome Blue Ruin.
The more I think about it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with 8, but shame on me for thinking 7. There's a lot on the bone here.
There really is.
There's grizzle. There's cartilage. A lot of meat on this one, but let's go over
it's bloody, too.
Let's go over to the producer for next week's reveal. I want to hear what you got for us in the queue coming up, Adam. What you going with?
We need something a little bit lighter than this.
Yeah.
So I want to go a little Box Trolls.
A little Box Trolls. You're box talking
trolls.
About the stop animation
yes.
feature.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get ready.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a cartoon.
It is kind of like a cartoon. Have we ever... We've never done a
stop motion
in a 90s show. We've never done a stop action.
I don't think we have. We've done a couple animated. It's been a long time.
Well, yeah.
What was the last? Well, we did the Plimtoon.
The Plimtoons, yeah.
Did the Plimtoon thing.
And then Metropia.
And we're talking about the same people that made Coraline and Paranorman, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Coraline. I never saw Paranorman.
Yeah.
It's
so
awesome.
So if you get the idea, you know, there you
go.
Yeah.
Stop action. All right. Rock and
let's
roll.
Do it, man. Box Trolls next week. Producer says let's talk about it. I hope it is on Netflix.
It is.
Okay. Sometimes you got to cross your fingers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's next week. Box Trolls. Who knows what the top three is going to be? We're going to come up with something original. We're going to let the movie inspire our top three next week, as always. So look for that. Once again, Blue Ruin here. So we'll see you next week. Box Trolls. And until then. However it is you say good night,